You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. Pepsi is made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. And we are back here on Taco Tuesday. The Ravens pulling out a very impressive 24-10 win over the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday in Week 9. Moves them to 6-2. Now, still the 5 seed in the AFC. But again, I don't think seeding really matters at this point. We've seen what the 1 seed can do. We've seen what the 6 seed can do just as early as last season. So Baltimore, a very impressive win. Down a lot of defensive players and an offense that really struggled in the first half. And here to dissect all of it with me today is Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Spencer, how are you doing today?
Doing well. The Ravens are doing well, moving to 6-2 for the second consecutive year, as they typically play their strongest football under John Harbaugh in November and December. So things are looking up. The Ravens are about halfway through their tough part of their schedule, so to speak, with an Eagles game that looked like it was going to be really difficult before the season. It ended up being difficult despite the Eagles' injuries, but the Ravens walked away with a win there. Obviously, the Steelers game and the Colts with the Patriots, who are not as formidable as they seemed, then the Titans and the Steelers again. So after that, things get a lot easier. Cowboys, Browns, Jags, Giants, Bengals. So those are not going to be terribly difficult games, as the Ravens have had a little bit of a gauntlet here, and they'll continue to have to, but this is the tough part of the schedule. So if they're able to get a win or two, they'll be in pretty good shape. And moving on to the postseason, it feels like at this point, despite some tumultuous times over the past couple of weeks. So Ravens are in good shape, and it's exciting. They had a very exciting win.
Yeah, and I think that this right here is the stretch, the tough stretch of Baltimore's schedule, where they have now this primetime game against the Patriots coming up. They have the Titans. They have the Steelers. And it's that difficult stretch where I think we're going to see a lot of who Baltimore is. What is this Baltimore team made of? And especially with the loss of Calais Campbell for multiple weeks, which we'll talk about in the second segment, we'll see just what the identity of this Baltimore team is. Can they perform in the spotlight down some key players? But Spencer, going back and looking at this 24-10 win for Baltimore over the Colts, I mean, impressive is the word I keep coming back to, because I mean, it really was. You had Lamar Jackson, who was pretty much ineffective throughout the entire first half. The whole offense was ineffective throughout the entire first half. So Spencer, I want to start by asking you, how did the Ravens go from that terrible first half on offense and turn it around and put together an actually pretty good performance in that second half?
Well, the first thing that they did in the second half was come out and go tempo. And the reason that I think that the tempo was so successful was because Ravens had ample time at the line of scrimmage. The play clock wasn't wearing thin, and they had time to line up, understand what the defense is doing, you know, read a little bit. Where a lot of times this offense is young, Lamar Jackson, I think, hasn't had a great sense of urgency getting them lined up. It seems like they call the play in through the headset, which goes to Lamar Jackson's wrist on his wristband, which has the plays on it. And then Lamar has to find that on his wrist and then regurgitate it to the offense, break that. And oftentimes, sometimes we see Lamar Jackson having to go double check back on the play because he's kind of, you know, translating through, you know, his wristband. And I think that's slowed them down a little bit. So they ended up going tempo in the second half to open up and mitigating that process. One of the first schematic changes that I noticed as I rewatched TV broadcast before the All-22 came out was in the first half, the Ravens went empty backfield 4 times. Those plays resulted in no first downs. 2 of them were on 3rd down, 1 on 1st down, 1 on 2nd down. No first downs there. The Ravens last year in 2019 were, by EPA and by many other metrics, the best team in the NFL out of empty backfields, where Lamar Jackson really did a lot of damage, had some signature plays out of empty. You know, you think of what he did to the Browns in Week 16. You think of what he did to the Seahawks with some huge scrambles and another couple big plays here and there. All across, that was a big part of their offense. And what teams have started to do is really send a wide delayed blitzer. And that blitzer has to play with good contain, because if Lamar beats them to the perimeter and kind of cleanly gets an angle on them, then he can really start to do some damage. But teams have had good contain blitzes where the point is to just kind of rush Lamar Jackson, not give him a clear running lane, and keep him crowded. And I think he's struggled to really beat those this year. And at the same time, I don't think there's anything to that other than teams are disciplined and they've seen it a lot. So I think that is one of the few ways that you could say, quote unquote, teams have figured out the Ravens or figured out Lamar Jackson. They've had difficulty in those empty sets. In the second half, they ran one empty set in the fourth quarter. And what they did on that play was they had Justice Hill out at the right wide receiver position on the boundary. And Justice Hill came in motion on a jet sweep motion, and they ran a play action. And Lamar Jackson actually flipped the ball to Willie Snead, I believe, on 3rd and 4. And Willie Snead went and picked up a first down. So it was kind of a little mini boot out of it. It wasn't just a straight drop back, and Colts didn't have time or the intention of being able to blitz him and disrupt a kind of a true drop back there. So I think getting rid of empty was big. We also saw a lot of play action in RPO. The Ravens dropped back 13 times in the second half. Lamar Jackson completed 10 of 10 pass attempts. He had 3 scrambles as well. Of those 13 dropbacks, 10 of them were RPO or play action, and Lamar Jackson hit his targets. I mean, the play action, we saw some max protection. We saw them start to use Nick Boyle as well as Pat Ricard to help out the offensive line. And those two guys can take out pretty much anyone in the NFL, Pat Ricard and Nick Boyle. Combining the two of them is like having 1.5 offensive linemen on someone. They do a great job when they work in tandem, especially when one of them comes in motion. Mainly Ricard comes in motion in those situations. So Boyle kind of steers the defender one way, and then Ricard just pushes him back in. So they've really bottled some things up. I would love to see more of that moving forward. Also, the Ravens were just accurate. I mean, Lamar Jackson was just calm. He was under control. He was running the offense that we saw last year, a lot of pistol, a lot of gun. We saw some two tight end sets to one side. I like to call it the power pistol, where you see two tight ends, Nick Boyle and Mark Andrews, line up on one side of the formation, both in line as actual tight ends. And on the other side of the formation, we saw two wide receivers. So they were using 12 personnel to run power pistol, two wide receivers on one side, which gives you a speed element, gives you a passing element to it. And then, of course, you know, Mark Andrews can do some things. Nick Boyle, a nice underneath option. But having those two can also give you the power element of the run game. And from there, you can use a ton of motion. There's a lot of diversity. I actually think that is the pinnacle. The best formation in football is the power pistol. I've been adamant about that. There's a great article on The Athletic about it. But they started using that. And the RPOs, the play actions, Lamar Jackson really got into a rhythm. And from, you know, a hashtag analyst, just a easy fan perspective to say, he was calm. And I think a lot of that was having time at the line of scrimmage. I think they made getting set, getting to the line of scrimmage, operating calmly, having the motions be not rushed. And there's this whole panic that starts. The quarterback, you know, the offense feeds off of the quarterback. And when the quarterback is rushing to get someone in motion, then the motion man rushes. And the offensive line is kind of hearing this frantic cadence maybe a little bit, or different things, or wondering about, oh, no, is this going to be a delay game? Am I lined up right? And we've seen the Ravens end up not getting 7 guys on the line of scrimmage and covering the end man on the line of scrimmage. I want to say at least 5 times in the last month, those illegal formation penalties and things like that. And those feel like the result of a frantic last-ditch kind of effort to get the ball off. And it's unacceptable. I think it's completely and utterly unacceptable at the NFL level to continuously be getting illegal formation penalties. Those shouldn't happen in high school as much as they're happening to the Baltimore Ravens right now. So that's an indictment on Lamar Jackson. That's an indictment on Greg Roman, John Harbaugh, everyone, in my opinion. So those were ugly, but those got cleaned up because they got to the line of scrimmage. So they were able to convert on third down. They also started throwing the ball on first down and utilizing play action on first down. This is kind of silly, and people have different arguments to go with it, but on 1st and 10 in 2019, the Ravens have converted 37.7% of their first downs when they've thrown the, or converted 37% of their pass attempts on 1st and 10 into a new set of downs. They've gotten a first down on first down. Conversely, they've run the ball successfully for a new set of downs only 9% of the time. And that's down from 2019, where the Ravens were at 13% doing so. The Ravens were averaging 5.45 yards per carry on 1st and 10 when they ran the ball. This year, 4.2. So that's down almost 20% or over 20%. So that's a pretty big drop off. And the Ravens essentially went from 2019 being an outlier, able to run the ball so successfully on first down, to pretty good, you know, a good team on first down and 10 running the ball. And if you get into the deep analytics Twitter, the number one most hated, most inefficient play among the analytics community is running the ball on first and 10. Second and eight isn't great. You know, those kinds of things. And sure, the Ravens run the ball really well and establish the run, rah, rah, rah. But when you're able to hit on play action, open things up, you end up having yards per attempt, all those things. So it's just a litany of ways to convert a new set of downs and push the limit and put the ball in Lamar Jackson's hand. And especially in this game, the Colts came out and blew the doors off of the Ravens offensive line to start the game. It was a little bit of indecision. I don't think the Ravens just didn't hold the ball very long in the first half. They have the speed option on third and three early on. I think that was the first possession. And it seemed like what I saw is that Lamar Jackson expected a read option. He kind of held the ball out as if J.K. Dobbins was going to come meet him at the mesh point. I'm not sure if that was intentional or a fake, but in the meantime, Bradley Bozeman got pushed 4 yards into the backfield. And all he was trying to do was seal the outside, which makes me think it was a speed option. The way that J.K. Dobbins immediately got out wide makes me think it was a speed option. And looks like Lamar got the play wrong a little bit. So the Colts blew that one up. Ravens punt the ball. Again, third down, Lamar Jackson tries to target Marquise Brown. And ball, you know, gets bobbled on an out route, about 8 yards, and the Ravens needed seven. And everybody got, you know, pretty hasty on Twitter pretty quickly. Oh, you want to tweet about target? Yeah. So then Marquise Brown dropped the ball, another punt. And the Ravens, you know, ultimately ended up punting five times. The final possession they had of the first half was, you know, 40 seconds left. Your offense hasn't done much. You don't want to turn the ball over. You're kind of feeling good about the fact that the game's only 7-10, but you feel awful about the offense. So you want to go into halftime and make adjustments. The Ravens, you know, threw a screen and then ran the ball twice. So those are three drives where it was really just, you know, a botched play on a speed option, a drop, and then the end of the half. So the Ravens only had the ball two times other than that, and those had some other issues as well, penalties being a huge factor in the one. But ultimately, they just didn't execute well, and they had a couple misfortunes go their way or go against them, or so to speak, and it was a tough week and a tough opponent. So in the second half, the Ravens come out. Like I said, they cut the empty. They use the play action. They use the RPOs. They start, you know, Lamar Jackson starts rolling out and buying time and actually scrambling. And people so often have this portrayal of Lamar Jackson as this quarterback that, you know, especially non-Ravens fans, where they want to say that Lamar Jackson, you know, is a run-first quarterback and yada, yada. I think he needs to scramble more. I think he always needs to scramble more, especially if, you know, he has space to kind of roll out and move. There's not a lot of guys, once he gets a head start, that can cut him off. We saw him get an angle on Darius Leonard, one of the fastest linebackers in the NFL, twice, and able to do some things. So it was a calm second half. The Ravens moved the ball well. And Lamar Jackson simply didn't miss. It ended up being a really efficient second half and was really encouraging.
Very encouraging for this Baltimore Ravens offense in the second half. They had multiple opportunities to throw in the towel here throughout this entire game on both sides of the ball. You know, you start moving the ball with efficiency in the third quarter, you have a great drive, and all of a sudden Gus Edwards fumbles in the red zone inside the 10-yard line, and that's it. You know, maybe it's like, all right, well, we moved the ball effectively, but at the end of the day, they were probably not playing well enough. Now, Baltimore didn't use that as an excuse. They came out, they went with their up-tempo offense. Their run game opened up the pass game. To an extent, the run game struggled for the most part throughout the day, but they were hitting numbers in the middle of the field. Lamar Jackson loves the middle of the field, but we saw the outside throws as well, more so in the first half, but he was hitting them. He was hitting those throws. And even in the second half, we saw an 11-yard completion of Miles Boykin. There were a couple of those outside throws. And a lot of people are quick on the trigger to say that Lamar Jackson can't utilize the outside of the field to his advantage. And if you stack the middle of the field, it's his kryptonite. Well, the Ravens showed, and Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore offense, they showed that he still hit big passes to Nick Boyle in the middle of the field. That throw to Marquise Brown, multiple throws to Marquise Brown in the middle of the field. Mark Andrews, same thing. I mean, you can take away what you want from Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense. They'll just find a way to get it back in other ways, and that's what makes this offense so deadly. And I think a big reason why they were able to kind of pick up the pace in the second half and use that up-tempo offense to their advantage. But we're going to head into our first break here, and when we get back, we'll be flipping the field and talking about the Ravens' dominant defensive performance, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Go to madefootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. The world in 2020 can feel like an unstable and dangerous place, but we can't live in fear. Taser is giving people the confidence to protect themselves by creating life-saving self-defense technology. They use an electrical charge to immobilize attackers for up to 30 seconds, allowing you time to escape and send emergency dispatch to your GPS location. Taser is available without a permit in most U.S. states. Get the Taser Pulse Plus or Taser Strike Light at Taser.com with promo code NFL. Save 15% now at Taser.com, promo code NFL, spelled T-A-S-E-R.com, promo code NFL. Restrictions apply. See site for details. We are back with our second segment of this Locked On Ravens Taco Tuesday edition. Kevin Ostreicher is still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, flipping the field and talking about this Ravens really dominant defensive performance they had against this, I believe, very underrated Colts offense, held the Colts to just 10 points throughout the entire game, and all 10 of those points coming in the first half. It was a really nice defensive performance in the first half. I think the defense really kept this offense in the game. Now, I know that Eric DaCosta and a lot of people were talking about how DaCosta built this defense to help hold leads. But really what we've seen over the last few weeks is the offense has seemingly started either a bit slower, they've had a few instances of lapses, costly turnovers. This defense has helped this offense stay in the game over the past few weeks. So, Spencer, with everything that was thrown at the Ravens against this really underrated Colts offense, again, we saw Marlon Humphrey get the coronavirus. He's out for this game. Seven defensive players outside of Humphrey go on the reserve COVID list. You have LJ Fort come off that list and miss this game with a finger injury. And then Calais Campbell, for kind of the icing on the cake, ends up leaving on the first defensive series with a calf injury that's going to keep him out for multiple weeks. So, Spencer, just how impressive was this performance on defense?
This defensive performance just solidified that the Ravens can win games defensively. The interception from Marcus Peters has gotten a lot of flack, but in the end, he made a play on the ball. You know, regardless of whether that ends up being an interception or not, it just showed how difficult it was for the Colts to push the ball down the field against Jimmy Smith, against Marcus Peters, and they really only had one opportunity to hit a deep ball, and it was to Johnson deep down the sideline. He got exactly one step on Jimmy Smith, and the throw wasn't right on the money. Jimmy Smith was inside, and the ball came back inside, and Johnson had to try and turn and twist, and Jimmy Smith was there. So if the Colts weren't hitting on all cylinders down the field, nothing was happening. They were able to dink underneath a few times, but rallying to the football smoothly was huge, and I think that the three young linebackers, Chris Board, Malik Harrison, and Patrick Queen, had great games overall. Queen has been ostracized for his coverage ability so far this season. If you check out his PFF grade, it's like a negative 7 billion, essentially, in coverage. But all I saw was a linebacker reading screens and going and sniffing them out and making it difficult and making some plays. We saw a lot of hustle, a lot of rallying to the football. A huge play, an underrated play in this game, was a screen that ends up getting kicked out, I believe, to Nyheim Hines. And Justin Matabuike, playing the three technique, 300-pound man, but a very mobile man, goes and chases it down from behind, gets a third down stop because he hauled. And that looked like it was going to be a 20-plus yard gain with a 4.38 Olympic kind of speed guy in the open field. We saw what he did last week and had that incredible somersault, freaking 360 misty flip, whatever it's called, in a round off into the end zone after he scores. And Matabuike chased him down from behind. Derek Wolfe made plays down the field. You know, Calais Campbell went down. Other guys stepped up. I thought that Pernell McPhee dominated on the perimeter, pushing tight ends routinely back inside, crashing down. Ultimately, Marcus Peters makes another play, stripping the ball of Jonathan Taylor. Chuck Clark, with the wherewithal to scoop the ball, stay in bounds, and, you know, didn't get ahead of himself. He kept his eyes up, looked around him, and made sure he didn't go down. Ends up finding the end zone, keeping the Ravens in the game in the first half. And if it wasn't for that play, the Ravens might not have been able to, you know, get the momentum that they needed after that opening drive where they go down and ultimately end up fumbling, but prove that they could move the ball. So that might have put things in a little bit more of a more difficult situation, but especially in the second half, Wink Martindale absolutely pinched and squeezed and bared down upon the Colts offense with different looks And you hear Philip Rivers after the game saying that the Ravens used a lot more cover two than he expected. But the thing about saying that is that if you watch Deshaun Elliott pre-snap, he's up at the line of scrimmage a lot. Chuck Clark up at the line of scrimmage a lot. And within 2 or 3 seconds of the ball getting snapped, once the quarterback kind of gets down and gets prepared to receive the snap, Deshaun Elliott's hauling ass 20 yards backwards. And all of a sudden, he's way out of place from where you expected him to be. Kind of similar to what the Ravens wanted to do with Tony Jefferson and Eric Weddle at times, when they didn't really necessarily trust either of them to be a real single high guy all the time. But the Ravens pulled that one out of the bag today because it felt like they wanted to make sure that they gave Terrell Bonds some backup and gave some backup to an ailing, you know, DB room where Khalil Dorsey gets banged up and it's just Terrell Bonds, who I thought, you know, didn't play amazing, but he had really tight coverage on a cover zero downfield against Michael Pittman. He was right in his inside hip pocket. The ball's a little overthrown, but Bonds was right there. And that's encouraging to see, because if Pittman's wide open, Philip Rivers can put some air on the ball and let Pittman run under it. But that wasn't the case. He had to throw it over Bonds. And guys just stepped up all around. Malik Harrison, early in the first quarter, he was a tone setter, man. You see a play early on, and actually two plays in a row where he makes a stop. But the Colts are, they ran the ball somewhat effectively. They had over 100 yards. I believe they averaged over 5 yards a carry as well. But Quentin Nelson coming to the left side on a outside zone concept. Malik Harrison flows with it, stays square, and snapped Quentin Nelson's neck back. Snapped into Quentin Nelson, makes contact with him, drives through him, an all-pro, you know, the Instagram viral sensation for what he does to guys in the open field on an outside run concept. And Malik Harrison ran right through him and made a tackle. And, you know, I mentioned Pernell McPhee. Yannick Ngakoue had a great game, causing Rivers to have to move in the pocket and chasing things down, being explosive, showing some open field ability. I think that was underrated, that the Ravens got another really fast defender up in that front seven. So the Ravens have speed. They have power. Brandon Williams eating blocks left and right. I thought Derek Wolfe played like a man. Jalen Ferguson kind of had some struggles early on some of the misdirections containing the edge, but crashed down the line, made a couple big tackles. So overall, they just rallied to the damn football, made plays, and they weren't out of place. They didn't have any blown coverages. There wasn't any, you know, huge missed assignments. And considering how many guys didn't practice, considering they don't have Marlon Humphrey, considering Calais Campbell goes down, all these different factors, all these guys not practicing, and they go to Indianapolis and win for the first time in franchise history. That was the Ravens' first win in Indianapolis. They forced 2 turnovers, one of which is a touchdown. The Ravens have scored the most defensive touchdowns since Wink Martindale took over, and that's not by accident. These fumbles are not by accident. They are from or luck. They are from sheer training. They are from instilling the shots on goal message. If a runner is up, get the ball out. If somebody's got a tackle secured, get the ball out. Punch it, jab it, rip it, you know, bop it. Get the ball out. And the Ravens do it so well. They lead the NFL in turnovers on fumbles this year. And it was just an all-around great performance. They didn't even get any. They didn't have any sacks. No sacks in this game. But you kind of felt that Philip Rivers felt rushed. He couldn't find anyone deep. And the Ravens trusted their guys. So ultimately, they showed the ability to adapt, to give some different looks, also take care of some guys that, you know, don't have a ton of game experience, particularly Bonds. And overall, you got to just give kudos and maybe a game ball to Wink Martindale there, who pitched a shutout in the second half and allowed the Ravens to play some ball control, get the ball back, and go win the game.
This was a textbook game of people stepping up in terms of guys not being available, guys getting injured. And we saw this is why the Ravens build their team the way that they do. This is why the Ravens preach and preach and preach drafting not for need, but for depth, for best player available, because this is what gets you the Marlon Humphreys. And then when the Marlon Humphreys go down, you have other guys who can come in, step up. This is also why they trade for, again, not position for the most part. We saw the Marcus Peters deal last year came out of nowhere, right? For me, at least, I was like, oh, Marcus Peters, great talent, but, you know, the Ravens have a good cornerback room, but that didn't stop them from doing that, and now we're seeing the dividends of that paying off. And you mentioned Malik Harrison. I mean, what a performance from him. I mean, just from a box score perspective, led the team in tackles, but you mentioned he looked great on the film for me. And Spencer, I want to kind of focus in on two guys you mentioned in your analysis there, two younger guys who needed to step up, whether because somebody got injured in the game or because they were just so decimated at a position, and that is Justin Madubuike and Malik Harrison. Now, I don't know how much you've watched of those two from this past game, Spencer, but what did you see out of them? Were you impressed? Is there stuff that they can improve on? What's your take on those two guys?
I believe that Malik Harrison, I had a first round grade on Malik Harrison that is put on Baltimore beatdown back in March. I didn't understand how there were concerns about him as a player. I can understand maybe not thinking he was a top 15 guy, a top 20 guy, or maybe worth, you know, a first round pick to a team that needs players at premier positions. But in comparison with Jordan Brooks, in comparison with even Patrick Queen, with Kenneth Murray, with Logan Wilson, with a lot of these top guys, Malik Harrison has a very calm game, a very calm but violent game. He plays linebacker at a true, pure linebacker disposition. He flows. He follows the guards. If the guards pull, he's on their inside pocket. If there's a pass play, he comes downhill calmly but ready. He has great length, great strength. He is one of only five linebackers, and this is a linebacker position group. When you go to the combine, you get designated as a defensive lineman, linebacker, yada, yada, yada. They finally ended up switching that. There's an edge now, I believe, but you get a positional designation. So there have been five players in the history of the NFL combine to measure 6'3 or taller, 245 pounds or heavier, have a 36-inch vertical or higher, a 4.65 40 or faster, and to run a 6.85 three cone or quicker. Malik Harrison, DeMarcus Ware, Von Miller, TJ Watt, and actually Tyus Bowser. And that's elite company. I mean, Tyus Bowser has not proven to be an elite player at this level, but you can see what kind of athlete he is on the football field. And for an inside linebacker to have that kind of size and the instincts that he has as a pure inside linebacker is incredible. I think in the passing game, he's not a matchup guy. I don't think he's a guy you want in man coverage at all. I think he can do it a little bit if he needs to. That's not his strength. That is his weak point, yes. But in zone coverage, as a hook or hook to curl or curl defender, he has good eyes, he has length, he understands passing lanes, and he's disruptive. And we've seen him wrangle down some tackles ahead of the sticks before they got to the first down because he gets a good beat. He reads quarterbacks well. He has good footwork. And all those things. I think the only downfall of his game is his footwork in man coverage. That is all. But to me, I saw a player that braves through contact, delivers punishment, and is a sure tackler. And he didn't have a ton of snaps, but he played really well. And then speaking of Justin Madubuike, he's just explosive. He's a different kind of defensive lineman than the Ravens have had and drafted. And I think that Eric DaCosta has had kind of a paradigm shift in what he wants from defensive linemen as opposed to what Ozzie Newsome kind of drew up, the Tony Siragusa, Sam Adams formula where you get two fire hydrants and stick them in the middle and try and occupy blockers and all that stuff. They have one that's Brandon Williams, who's essentially a center and is built to beat on centers and take double teams and that kind of stuff. But he wanted guys that are more explosive, a little more athleticism that can make plays and run around. And we saw Broderick Washington, who's a late round guy that fits that bill a little less, but he's in that mold. And getting Calais Campbell, a guy with length and athleticism, and Derek Wolfe, another guy who's much more mobile than a Michael Pierce or Brandon Williams or, you know, Chris Wormley. And having those guys come in and able to make plays instead of just hold ground feels like that's a paradigm shift for Eric DaCosta, something he does differently than Ozzie, perhaps. He gets rid of Daylon Mack. He didn't want another nose. He has Justin Ellis as well. But to me, Madubuike is in the right spot. When he gets a beat on a run concept, he beats his man a lot and forces a lot of cutbacks. When you force a cutback, running back's not going to have a lot of speed, a lot of momentum, and other flowing defenders are going to be able to rally to the football and go chase them down. I think we saw that quite a few times from Justin Madubuike. We haven't really seen him flash as a pass rusher quite yet. He was coming back from injury, but I would like to see him start using his hands, using some snatch like he used at A&M. But overall, he's been solid. He has done what is asked of him. He's filled in very well. He hasn't been a weak point at all. And defensive line, offensive line, those are not positions that guys typically come in and look like an all-pro, especially guys that are drafted outside of the top 10, top 15, and that really look the part. And Justin Madubuike simply does. He's not out of place. He's not getting beat. He's not getting bullied. He's not, you know, having false steps one way or the other based on the run concept. He's doing a good job of what a lot of the Ravens rookies have been doing, and that's not playing too fast. Just executing your assignment, doing it well, and not messing up the flow of the play, not being a weak spot, not being out of place. And that's really encouraging because once you consistently are always in place, that's when you can really add that extra element to your game. He's an explosive athlete, a mobile athlete, very strong at the point of attack. And I think we're going to see him start to step it up here in the next couple of weeks, maybe in the pass rushing department, and especially next year as well. So those two guys, I believe, are guys that are ready to contribute to a playoff team and a team that has Super Bowl aspirations. So I was really encouraged out of what I saw from both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about guys who maybe weren't expected to have a huge role coming into the year. I think Madubuike was, you know, maybe the exception where you could have him in there, and he's a guy who's a rotational piece. And honestly, same with Malik Harrison as well, where maybe you try to bring him along in the earlier parts of the year like we saw, and then, you know, there's an opportunity. OJ Fort goes down. There's an opportunity for him to get the playing time, and he showed that. Again, I had a second-round grade, an early second-round grade on Malik Harrison. It should have been a second-round pick. Malik Harrison should have been that second-round pick, and I believe that those two guys, they're going to be big contributors down the stretch for Baltimore, and they're going to need them to perform really well in the wake of these injuries that have happened. And Baltimore, the whole league actually has been pretty unlucky in terms of injuries, and you know, just it's next man up for Baltimore, and I think they're in a good position, even though there are some guys, some stars who have gone down for Baltimore. But we're going to head into our final break now, and when we return, we'll be talking a bit about the next matchup that Baltimore has, and that is with the New England Patriots, as well as talking about the Calais Campbell injury and the secondary. So stay tuned for that, and we will be back soon. Built Go makes you the best you at whatever you do. Break through your wall, whether it's a mental or physical wall. Break through it with Go every day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for the body. Visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. We return here on Locked On Ravens as we get into our final segment here on Taco Tuesday. Kevin Oshaker still talking here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, before we get into this little mini preview with the New England Patriots, I do want to talk a bit about a little bit of the defense still and just how Baltimore is going to respond to a few positions that are beginning to get a little bit decimated by injury. And so I guess we'll start with the Calais Campbell injury. His calf strain is expected to keep him out for multiple weeks. John Harbaugh was pretty mum in his press conference after the game about just how long that will be. But it's assumed that he will be out for multiple weeks. So, Spencer, we talked a little bit about Justin Madubuike and this Ravens defensive line. How are they going to have to respond, and what looks are you expecting in the absence of Calais Campbell?
Well, we saw Derek Wolfe get his season high in snaps as he had a little bit of a neck problem and then had a COVID scare, I believe, with his family, and he missed some time there for the Ravens, and he ended up playing 51 snaps. I think that he filled the role of the veteran that is savvy and understands run concepts and how to immediately beat them off the snap. He's mobile, he's explosive off the ball, he looks very healthy, and he's aggressive, and it was good to see. The Ravens are going to rely on him and Justin Madubuike, as well as Justin Ellis. You're going to see Justin Ellis come in a bit and spell Brandon Williams. So those guys are going to have to step up, and it's going to be difficult. It's ironic because it feels like the reason that the Ravens really wanted Calais Campbell was to bring length and to bring someone who can actually make plays in the backfield. And part of that being because of what the Tennessee Titans did to them in the divisional round last year. And you go look at what the Browns were able to do to them early, also the 49ers last year, and a couple of other teams had some modest success. So the Ravens wanted to get out of that weighted formula of having those pluggy, stocky fire hydrants and having two of them on the field. They definitely let Michael Pierce go, thanked him for what he did, and he's not a bad player or anything of the sort, but it just feels like they wanted some more penetration into the backfield to kind of cut running backs off earlier and put teams in second and long situations, get some stuff, some second and 10, second and 11, force teams to kind of try and throw more into that secondary, into that very expensive, talented, productive secondary. So Calais Campbell's a big loss. He creates a lot of opportunities for pass rushers, able to stunt and do some things. He also gets double teamed a lot, gets double teamed, I believe 30% of snaps. So he's been eating a lot of those double teams, still productive. His length bats down passes. So Ravens aren't really going to be able to replace him with what they have right now, but with Madubuike and Derek Wolfe and Williams, it feels like they're going to have stout run stuffers still. They also can rely on Pernell McPhee still. Jalen Ferguson's been really strong against the run, and you know they're able to crash inside, so it's just going to be understanding that they do have to step up a little bit. They can't afford to get gashed with Calais Campbell out, and Calais Campbell hasn't had, you know, a world beater year. He had a great game against the Eagles, but he's been consistently disruptive, consistently in the right place, especially against the run. One of the best run defenders in all of football. So with the Patriots next week, they are a team that doesn't feel like they have aspirations. They are missing playmakers. They run the ball a ton, but their offensive line has been up and down. They do have Michael Owenu, who is one of the top-rated guards in football. He's a rookie out of Michigan currently, but they don't threaten teams on the outside, and it feels like they're going to overwhelm the Patriots. The Titans the next week feels like it's going to be pretty tough for Campbell to come back from a calf strain. It's a big dude. He needs those big calf muscles in place and functioning at a high level to be able to be effective, as well as not risk injury to his Achilles tendon. It's going to be a tall task. The Ravens proved that they could play against a really stout Colts offensive line without Calais Campbell and stuff the run.
Yeah, I mean, this loss for Baltimore, it seems like they can't catch a break. The injury gods always seem to have it out for this Baltimore Ravens team. But again, it's the reason the Ravens are so big on their depth and are so big at drafting, again, not for need, but just actual best player available. Now we're going to see some guys step up. We're going to see, you mentioned, Justin Ellis come in and play, I think, a big role. Say maybe Roger Washington becomes active and we see a little bit of him as well. So the Ravens, I think, are well equipped to handle the loss of Calais Campbell. But much like we saw when Marshall Yonder retired, you can't really replace a star that easily. So hopefully the depth that Baltimore has will be able to kind of soften the blow that the loss of Campbell will have. But Spencer, this Ravens secondary right now, it is depleted, and that's putting it very nicely. As of this moment, Baltimore has three healthy cornerbacks on their roster, with Khalil Dorsey expected to go on IR and miss a couple of weeks with a dislocated shoulder. So now it's Marcus Peters, Jimmy Smith, and Terrell Bonds, and now Marlon Humphrey will come back from the COVID list, hopefully this week, so that'll make it four. But Baltimore has just been depleted ever since week two, ever since the offseason where they lost Biggie Marshall in that cornerback room. So, Spencer, are you concerned at all with the health of this cornerback room? And do you expect Baltimore to maybe seal the deal with the Tremont Williams or Brandon Carr?
Yes, I anticipate them to make a move. Brandon Carr feels like he's out of the question. I don't know why they wouldn't do it by now. I'm not great with speculation. I'm wrong quite a bit on speculation. But at this point, why is Brandon Carr not already, you know, here, if that's the case? Tremont Williams feels like a realistic option. Bigsby, the corner that had floated around, went to Arizona, and they're now seeing Byron Murphy and Devon Kennard come off of the IR. They waived him, and that's a guy that I would love to see the Ravens take a flyer on. He's had rave reviews, a lot of interest around the league, and I think that he would be a solid option, a young player that could be ascending and feels like he would have a lot on the line to fight for and try and prove. So I would anticipate the Ravens to try and give him a look. It was rumored that they might have had some interest in him, and I would anticipate they are on the waiver wire trying to. But the problem is, as a 6-2 football team, it's going to be at least, you know, 20 teams ahead of you there. So probably a long shot there. I would anticipate some sort of move in some capacity because they're too thin right now. With Dorsey banged up, Anthony Averett still out, Marlon Humphrey hopefully is back, but they're too thin. If Jimmy Smith, an older player who has suffered quite a deal of injuries, goes down, you're too thin. And that's a weakness when you go play the Steelers, when you go play the Titans, when you go play the Browns even, some of these better teams they have down the stretch, the Bengals, if they are able to give the Ravens a little bit more resistance in the offensive line, that could be tough. And one more injury puts them in a really scary place. And kind of we've seen that happen before with a good team with Super Bowl aspirations that just doesn't have enough healthy cornerbacks. And that was the 2014 Ravens that went into New England, held a 14-point lead two separate times in that game and couldn't get it done because, unfortunately, a guy named Rashad Melvin was targeted 18 times, allowed 14 receptions for 200 yards and a couple touchdowns. So you need to have cornerback depth. So I anticipate Eric DaCosta to do everything in his power to make sure they are good to go from that capacity.
The Ravens were signing guys off the street in that 2014 season, one of which was Rashawn Melvin, kind of how he got his start, bounced around Indy and Oakland afterwards. But yeah, you can't go into the playoffs so short on corners. And hopefully, once the playoffs begin, you'll have Marlon Humphrey completely healthy and COVID thing will be behind him. Jimmy Smith will still be healthy. Anthony Averett will be back, and we'll see what ends up happening. But I do expect Eric DaCosta to make a move at that position. But that's all I have for you today, Spencer. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And 7-2 sounds pretty good, all things considered, here in this season. What do you think?
Sounds pretty damn good. The Ravens will be in good shape, and a couple tough matchups after that, but I think they'll get healthy, hopefully, before the playoffs, knock on the old wood there, and see what they can do. Maybe they'll be going on the road with the Steelers, seeming like a little destined team to have a really strong season in this Ben Roethlisberger resurgence here with their quick passing offense. So I believe the Thanksgiving matchup will be a fun one, and we'll see how that plays out. But ultimately, the Ravens are in great shape, and Ravens fans should be happy.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be a good one. But Baltimore is in really good shape, Spencer. I do agree there. But that's all that we have for you today. When we get back tomorrow, it's more Ravens talk. We'll be talking with Cole and answering your mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you tomorrow.